Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I'm Kayla, and I'm here with my co-host...
Lucky Charms.
Ooh.
Because in the movie we're talking about, there's a character called Applejack, and I don't like that cereal, so I had to pick a cereal that I like. What would your cereal heist name be?
It would probably be Cheerios.
Cheerios, really? Like plain Cheerios? Like not even like anything else?
I mean, any multigrain, kind of flavored Cheerios are fine. I usually just eat Honey Nut.
Honey Nut Cheerios is a little long.
Yeah.
And I don't think you want Honey Nut to be your name.
No.
So I think maybe Cheerios is probably fine, I guess.
Occasionally our store has like flavored ones. Like I had a honey vanilla Cheerio recently that was good.
Wow.
And then like they have a pumpkin spice one in the fall.
Yes, I've had that one. That's a good one. Good Cheerio.
Cheerios are one of the only like gluten-free cereals. Right. So
that and Rice Krispies.
Not a fan of those. Fun times.
But enough talking about cereal. Let's get into the episode, which this is a pretty exciting episode. This is our first entry into our Summer of Wes series, where we're going to be going through Wes Anderson's filmography. Last summer, we did the Summer of Star Wars. And so this summer, we wanted to do something we like a little bit more than Star Wars. We don't like Star Wars, but watching All Star Wars back-to-back-to-back, like, all of them was a lot.
Yeah, just consuming all of Star Wars content at one time was not our best decision.
This might have a little more variety. So we'll do one of these at the beginning of every month of summer, so June, July, August, and September, just the first Tuesday of every month, and this is our first one. So, before we jump into that, though, we have a couple of answers to our last week's question of the week. And if you want to skip these, there's a timestamp below. And so, if you wanted to skip right into the Summer of West stuff, you can skip that. But for everyone else, let's go over our answers to last week's question of the week, which was, what would be your call sign?
Because
we reviewed Top Gun 2, which they have call signs, as we've talked about in that episode.
Uh-huh.
So my call sign, we stuck with stats, I believe, last episode. But your call sign, we came up with a new one.
Yeah, rewind.
Which now is on your Twitter handle.
I said it in the episode. I was like, I'll change it on Twitter to rewind.
And you did.
I did. I followed through.
You stuck true. Followed through on that one. But we had to ask everyone else, you know, what our audience's call signs would be. We got a couple interesting ones. I'll start with Dan's here from the Film Was Lit podcast. He said cold brew, which, you know, that I think that's two syllables. It's nice and short and sweet, or not sweet. I don't know how you have your cold brew. Maybe you drink it black. I'm trying to think what the sticker would be, though. Like, you know, they have sticker the logo.
Sure. Probably just coffee beans.
Like the whole, so it's like coffee beans make up all the letters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would be fun.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Cold brew.
Yeah, cold brew. Do you like cold brew? Are you a cold brew fan?
I am. I do really like cold brew.
I'm not as much of a fan, but I mean, I'll drink it. Like, I'm not a fan. It's kind of like the Eagles, like, or I get like the band. Like, you know, I'm not a fan, but I'm just like, I wouldn't say I'm an Eagles fan of the band. Not the football team. I don't give a crap about that. I'm talking about the band. Moving on, we have another food-related one. Ruby said waffle. This is because she said, I mean, .. waffle. Like, because that has been her username on Twitter for a while.
For a while.
Nickname. And yeah, that's a good one, too. I think it's short.
Fun.
It is sweet. Waffles are sweet.
I'm a fan of waffles.
What is your waffle order?
Well, now it's whatever is gluten-free.
Right. Well, like, but pretend that there's a magical land where gluten-free stuff, like, you don't have to think about
it. I used to get, like, I'm a fan of just, like, the regular Eggo waffles.
I
like the blueberry ones or the, like, chocolate chip ones. And then I can get behind, like, a real, like, actual... you know,
like
cook
a
waffle
Belgian
too.
Waffle
with like
deal.
Fruit on it, you know, maybe some right. strawberries, some raspberries, some blueberries. Yeah,
you can do a lot of stuff with waffles. Did you ever have the Eggo waffles that were like the Lego Eggo waffles?
Probably. Where
like, they were like shaped like Legos and you could like interlock them if you cooked them like actually and made them hard enough. It was pretty cool.
Huh.
I don't know why
fun.
They want kids to play with their food, but that's what I did with those.
I'm not a big like syrup person though, so
okay, yeah.
I don't have my waffles with syrup.
What do we get on Twitter? We got a couple on Twitter too.
Let's see. Alice the DM 1 says Chunky Monkey.
What's that? 1-4 syllables. Definitely on the longer end.
I feel like it needs to be shortened. I think monkey would be good.
Just monkey?
Yeah. Like, that seems kind of fun.
Yeah, I think it can be taken a lot of different ways. You know, it's a little more ambiguous. It's like, why was this your... You know, maybe it's because you ate a lot of bananas.
Oh.
Maybe it's because you they went to a playground and then they hung upside down.
Maybe you laugh and it sounds like a chimp.
Maybe. That's also... You could also
or
do that.
Or maybe you just like monkeys.
Things. Yeah. I mean, monkeys are not bad. I like them in, like, movies and stuff. I don't think I would like them in real life. Like, from a distance. I'll enjoy a monkey.
Mm.
But not in my room. Except as Curious George. I like Curious George.
I do like He's Curious George. I like monkeys. They're my favorite animal.
Wow. Fun fact. And then, lastly, we have Dan here. He said long wind, which I think this is in reference to... I mean... We've talked about his answers to our questions, which are always very long-winded. So long wind. But he also plays, I believe, euphonium. If I'm wrong, then I'm very sorry. But I think it's euphonium, and it's a wind instrument.
Mm.
So you know, it can go both ways.
You've gotta,
so that's a good
you've
one.
You've got to have good breath for that.
Truly, truly, yeah. It's no No violin there where you can just breathe whenever you want to. I think these are pretty good ones. I think we should just, instead of nicknames, just call everything call signs forward.
I agree.
Like, instead of being like, yeah, that's my nickname, like, yeah, that's my call sign. I think it's just cooler.
Yeah, I think so too.
So thank you everyone for answering, and we'll have another question at the end of this episode for you also to answer, and then we'll read that in the next episode. You know, it's like a vicious cycle. As they call it. But let's jump into the reason everyone's here, which is the Summer of West series. So you, I think, suggested this series. So why did you suggest this series for us to do?
I don't remember. I know that obviously we both love Wes Anderson and consider him in our favorite director, like lists for sure. We needed something for summer, and I was we've talked about doing, like, some Wes Anderson stuff, but we didn't really do a French Dispatch episode or anything like that because of its release, and so it was like, maybe it's time. Maybe we should do a whole summer of just going through all the Wes Anderson movies and, like, ranking them and everything.
And I think, like you said, we both are big fans of his movies, but, like, most filmographies... when you are like, I watch them all out of order, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fantastic Mr. Fox was the first one I watched, and then like I don't even remember what order I watched them in, but I always thought it would be interesting, and I always like wanted to watch it, his filmography, start to finish.
Uh-huh.
Because I think there is a lot of interesting things you can learn or like see about how his style develops and just all of that, and so I've always wanted to do that, and so this gives us a great opportunity to do that. And maybe get like a fresh ranking of his movies. And that's, I guess, what I'm kind of excited for, I guess, for the next 4 episodes, for us to kind of be able to see how his movies progress and like kind of break down what we think, why we think he went in certain directions and stuff like that. I think that'll be really fun.
Yeah, I rewatched all his movies like 2 years ago, I think. 2 or 3, like, recently enough. And obviously he has some new ones coming out. And, like,
right.
French Dispatch just came out this past year. So I'm excited to kind of revisit each of the older ones and then kind of include in the newer ones as they come out here. That's probably my main thing. I use this as an excuse to watch what I want to watch instead of like...
That's really how it goes over here.
Instead of us having to like keep, I don't know, like reviewing new movies and all that or doing Marvel content. Like, it's fun to kind of just do something that is more like niche or something that just like we want to do.
Niche, Wes Anderson. Not that Wes Anderson is niche.
But not like something we want. It's not like Star Wars, you know? It's not like we're doing some major blockbuster. We're not doing the summer of the MCU. Like.
Kill me. That would, every beginning of every month, we talk about a whole phase. Imagine like 10 movies. That'd be a nightmare. I think that would end the podcast.
I wouldn't mind doing like revisit, like in a while, like revisiting phase one, like rewatching all the OG ones and talking about those. But for
the
now,
L to
I
the
think
OG, the L to the OG ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I think.
No, I think that would be interesting.
That this is definitely the better option for us to watch Wes Anderson's movies.
I agree. We're going through chronologically, and so I tried at least to kind of find a good way to break all of them up because there are 10, and so that doesn't divide evenly into four. But I think we came up with a good way of breaking them up. So this episode, we're just going to be going over Bottle Rocket and Rushmore, which is our first two films. And then you'll just have to see how we break up the next ones, you know? We don't want to give away everything. Let's just jump into it. Get into the goods. And so just to give like a little brief history lesson, all right, everyone sit down, no talking. So Wes Anderson, he was born on May 1st, 1969 in Houston, Texas. He used to make I found this, he like made silent films when with his dad's Super 8 camera, using his friends and siblings as actors, which I think kind of maybe now you can see how he uses a lot of the same actors in all of his movies. So maybe that kind of like was something. I mean, I know obviously if you're only going to use your friends and siblings if they're there, but I think it's interesting that like they mentioned that and that was like a thing where like he had the same cast and stuff like that. So he went to school for philosophy. Wow. At University of Texas at Austin, and he also worked as a film projectionist.
Cool.
While he was there, which would have been a cool job. I think I would like that job. You get to learn something, fun times. And at school, that's where he met Owen Wilson. They met in 1989 at a playwriting class, and then they were roommates. And he graduated in 1991, and Owen Wilson, I don't think, graduated. So,
classic.
I mean,
Owen
no
Wilson.
Shame. You look where it's like, I worked out, you know, it worked. It's just like an interesting origin because that leads right into Bottle Rocket, both the short and the movie, which we will be getting into right after this ad break.
Back.
We just came from the ether, and now we're talking about Bottle Rocket. And this is a little of a weird one because obviously it's the first movie, and so there's a little bit more history behind it that would be interesting to talk about, I thought. So there's obviously the short, which was in 1992 is when the short came out. And this, though, they had a whole script written for the movie, but they only had enough money to film 13 minutes. But like, I don't think they knew that when they went in. So like, they just started filming and then they ran out of film, I think is really what happened. And so they just had like the movie. Well, you've seen the short.
Yeah.
It goes up to like, does it do the bookstore heist? It does. It's like after the bookstore heist, like that's like the last scene. And so that's what they shot. And they got to that point. And then it screened at Sundance in 1994. Now, just quickly, we can maybe talk too about it when we talk about the movie, but what are your thoughts on the short itself? Because we watched both for this. just, I think it's interesting, obviously, to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was kind of boring.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely not amazing, I will say.
It is what it is, I guess, would be my opinion. Like, it's interesting to watch it and be like, oh yeah, this was kind of how he started and how he got Bottle Rocket off the ground. But it's not, like, amazing or innovative that you're watching it and being like, oh my gosh, Wes Anderson's, like, first, like, published short that was in Sundance. Like, I'm not thinking that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's a lot of style behind, like, there is a lot more style than I would usually see in a short like that, I would expect. And one thing I liked that you don't really see much anymore, like, he doesn't really use, is jazz music. I thought that was really interesting how he used a lot of jazz music, probably because it was cheaper to use than, like, soundtrack music, like, by, like, the Rolling Stones and stuff, obviously. So I thought that was interesting. And I also thought you can definitely see the French New Wave influence, like, the most in that short. Yeah. Probably because, like, when you're first starting out, your influences are going to be less, more noticeable and less, like, intertwined with your own kind of sensibility. So that was the two things that stuck out to me, where, like, I thought the music was pretty cool, but, and also I thought it was where you really saw, like, the influence of, like, 400 Blows and stuff like that, where, like, you could really see that, especially in the title cards and everything. So now we move on to a little segment that I like to call Nepotism Time, which is a great segment whenever you gotta have it whenever you talk about someone's career. So the Wilsons, they're family friends with veteran screenwriter and producer L.M. Kit Carson. And then he showed the short to Polly Platt and James L. Brooks, who are two, like, very big producers. She did, like, Paper Moon and Last Picture Show, I think, and then he did a ton of stuff. They saw it, and, like, they kind of together funded the production for the movie. The script at this point, I think, was really long, and so they, like, gave them time to work on the script and refine it. So they've paid them $100 a day to refine the script, and it was, like, almost a year and a half that they, like, spent rewriting the script.
Wow,
which is so
crazy.
Funny. I mean, not that the movie isn't, like, there aren't good aspects for the movie, but it's funny, like, when you watch it to think, like, it took that long to, like, get what this script is. And I think that's something you can only understand, like, if you're in it and you're, like, you know, like, when you're working on something and it seems a lot more complicated than it actually is. So it's funny watching it now, like, wow, this took them, like, I mean, from 1991, which is, or, like, when they started it, like, 5 years to write this script, basically.
Wow.
So they rewrote the script, then they shot the movie, obviously.
Of course.
You know, as you do. In the short parts, they reshot. I think they kind of thought they might be able to keep the short, but then they obviously didn't keep it in black and white, and they made it in a wider aspect ratio, so they didn't keep the short. So they reshot that. They had really bad test screenings, actually. Skipping to one of the fun facts, at the time, it was the worst test screening points in the history of Columbia Pictures.
Wow.
So it was very bad test screenings. Because of that, they reshot out some stuff. They added and removed some stuff. I think they reshot and, like, rewrote the whole opening. Because I believe the opening, if anyone has seen the short, it kind of just goes right into it, you know? Where they're just, like, talking and, like, going to do the first heist. But then the movie, which I think is a better opening, opens with the whole him getting out of the hospital. And, like, I think it's just, like, it sets the tone a lot better, for sure.
Well, and it establishes their relationship from the beginning.
Definitely. And then they released the movie to good reviews, but bad box office success. Mm-hmm. Classic.
Love to see it.
It's always great when that happens, but it did have good reviews. Like, Martin Scorsese, I think, from the beginning, was, like, a big champion of this movie, and he, like, wrote about it like pretty recently after it came out. And I think it even made, like, his top 10 movies of 1990. So, like it did have, like, really good reviews and, like, really good press. It just isn't very marketable movie, I think. So I can understand why it might have not done great. I think, what was the budget here? I have it up. Not $5 million. Did you look at the box office numbers?
I did not.
Okay, so $5 million budget. How much do you think it made?
You said it bombed, right?
Pretty much, yes.
$5 million. I would say maybe like 750.
560. Just over $500,000. Tough.
Yeah.
Tough beat for them. Apparently, Owen Wilson thought about joining the Marines after that. Because he thought he was such a bad actor and writer. He was like, I might as well join the Marines, I guess. That was plan B. It's a good thing he didn't do that. Because then we wouldn't have a lot of the movies that he's done, which are good. So just now we can just start talking about the real movie, though. Like, just our thoughts on it. Do you want to read the summary I have here? And for all of these, we're going to go spoilers. Sure. Just like, I mean, we're spoiling Bottle Rocket, guys. Crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
So
no.
I can't. So just getting that out of the way now. No, I've been waiting.
After a stint at a voluntary psychiatric unit for exhaustion, Anthony gets roped into a complex 75-year plan mapped out by his enthusiastic best friend, Dignan. Included in the plan are a series of low-profile heists that will eventually lead them to getting in with mysterious crime boss, Mr. Henry. With the help of getaway driver, Bob Mapplethorpe, the only person they know who has a car, they successfully rob a local bookstore and head to a remotely located motel to lay low and wait for word from Mr. Henry. However, tensions soon begin to arise among the group, with Bob and Anthony questioning how truthful Dignan is being. Will the three achieve their dreams and reach the status of infamous criminal masterminds, or will their 75-year plan ultimately fizzle out?
Fizzle out in reference to bottle rockets and fireworks and stuff. Look at that.
Wow.
Yeah. So cool.
That
so
is
fun.
Amazing. You should become a screenwriter.
You know, if they'll pay me $100 a day, I would. Mm. Definitely.
Yeah.
That's more money than I would make teaching, so works for me. So just our thoughts on this movie. We get to get into it now. Definitely an interesting first movie. When was the first time you saw this, like when you did that thing 2 years ago?
Yeah, let me look and see when that was.
Because I feel like this is really only one that you watch. Not that it's like not good, but like it's one that people usually only watch when they're like into Wes Anderson. You know, no one watches it and is like, oh, I didn't know that was by him.
Yeah, I watched it for the first time in June of 2019.
Okay, that's probably right around when I watched it as well. That same kind of year, time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I only watched it, because I was watching through his filmography. Otherwise, I probably never would have watched it for any reason.
Yeah, I mean, if you hadn't known the plot, I think you might have if you knew there was heists involved. Because I don't think when you watch the movie, I think it definitely doesn't really deliver on the heist thing.
Oh, definitely not, unfortunately.
Like, if you had read the word heist, you might have watched it, I think.
I might have. Yeah, you're not wrong.
So, I know, you know, you might have gotten roped in by the keywords. So, what do you think about this movie? What are your thoughts on it here?
I don't really like it. Yeah, I didn't really even want to have to rewatch it, but I did anyway.
Bummer.
Just because it's been a few years since I've seen it. It just is not my thing. I don't really like the characters, and the plot isn't as interesting to me as, like, other movies, so it's not one that I tend to think, like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna revisit this movie, Bottle Rocket, my favorite. So I would say that this is, like, the bottom of my list of Wes Anderson movies.
Well, definitely right now, out of the two we'll be talking about, I will say, definitely at the bottom.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I think that when I rewatched it this past week, I definitely, like, there were parts in it that I did like. I think specifically it looks really good, despite it not having, like, a signature Wes Anderson symmetrical, like, style to it.
Right.
Like, I felt like it's still really establish a specific style of cinematography. Like, it wasn't just completely cheap and trying to go like a blockbuster or whatever. Like, I felt like it actually looked stylized to an extent. And the colorization of it was also pretty spot on with some of his other films in his earlier years, especially of like the way certain colors pop or having a character wear certain colors or the color grading of it being like slightly more like orangey in the highlights and stuff or like pinky. And so I think that there's parts of it that I was like, oh, okay, like this isn't that bad, but I just don't like the story or the characters. And so I think that makes it harder for me to even appreciate the technical elements since I don't like it as a whole, I guess.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I agree with the technical stuff because, I mean, it's only 5 million, so there's only so much they can do. And I don't even know, like, it's a his first time directing, like, a movie. So there's definitely going to be, like, not everything in place. I think you're, like, the color is definitely the thing that stands out the most to me because, like, even if it's not, like, a Grand Budapest Hotel color palette, like everything is like this, these one of these five colors, like you can still tell there's a big attention to color.
Mm-hmm.
Even in like the yellow jumpsuit detail, like details like that where like they don't seem like they would be important, but I think they do make a big difference in like giving everything personality and like making certain scenes stand out. So I think, yeah, it's like there are elements, but there's not. We'll talk more with Rushmore. I think there's a lot more in that movie where like a lot of elements there that's like, oh, okay, that's obviously where this came from, you know. But in terms of the story, I think like you said, there are good moments. I think like even like the first act and the last act are like not bad. I think it really, the issue comes in the second act, the whole motel thing, and like the romance subplot, I think really like drag it down, and it really like messes with the pacing too, because once he gets back, then it's like it's a lot faster paced again, because it's pretty fast paced in the beginning and it's a nice quick pace, and then everything like comes to a halt at the motel and it's like so slow. And then he leaves and then it's pretty fast paced again, so it's just the structure of it I think definitely throws me off a little bit. I think if it were maybe just more focused on the three of them, just like doing heists and like even if it was just more of like that bookstore heist, but like, I don't know. I just don't think it really needed the romance subplot and like them staying in this one motel, I think really kills it. Cause like, I do not mind the characters. I think they're not his best, but I think they have good character dynamics at least. So it's interesting to see them interact. Sure. And so maybe if it was just more focus on them and not just like them sitting around at this motel, like waiting for Mr. Henry to call them or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, cause I really like the ending is, I think, actually pretty good. And like the final heist is so funny. I really like the final heist, and I do think like the ending is nice. So there are aspects of it that I do like, but I think it being so up and down plot-wise definitely kills a lot of the rewatchability.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like, I would kind of say, I don't know how much I would like this movie if it wasn't for like thinking about it in terms of like where it came from. Cause I do think the history behind it is interesting. And also that it's like his first movie, you know? So I don't know how much of the stuff that I like comes from just like, it's interesting to see the beginnings of a career in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And also like early, like well, not early, like mid 90s indie movie culture. I think it's just an interesting thing of that too, like responding to a lot of the early 90s stuff. But the movie itself is just like, there's parts I like and there's parts I don't really like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely very mid. I would say a little lower than mid. Like, it's not quite mid.
I do think
mid.
Owen Wilson is, like, surprisingly good, though. He'd never acted before this. This was, like, his first. I think, like, it's really crazy that he never acted before, because I do think he, like, steals every scene that he's in.
Yeah, I would agree.
Like, he just has, like, a lot of just, like, he plays to the camera really well, I think. Like, in a way that's not obvious, too. Where it's not like he just seems like he's just acting natural, but there's something about him that like really pulls you to want to like look at him in every scene and like listen to like everything he says. I do think he's Dignan is pretty funny.
Whenever I watch this, I think Dignan is like Jake Paul. Like in scenes, like the way he acts.
With the bike.
With the bike, when he's like riding around on the bike, I'm like, oh my God, it's Jake Paul. And like, even all the way like he talks and acts, I'm like, this, like maybe Jake Paul watched this movie one day and was like, this is how I want to be like Dignan. And that was what he did.
Definitely, I think that would be
And Luke Wilson could be like Logan Paul, not going to lie.
Yeah,
like,
a little more chill. But definitely he's got some stuff going on that's like, I don't know, a little weird. Yeah. And then Bob Mapplethorpe is like just anyone from Team 10, I guess, you know?
Sure.
One of them. And then they make like a video afterwards, like really mad at him.
Why he is no longer in our group, not clickbait. And then he makes the video, why I left Team 10.
Mr. Henry's landscape group. I think one thing that's interesting to talk about with this movie, which isn't really about the movie itself, but I do think it shows a lot how like privilege can really come into play with like a movie like this, because if anyone else had made this movie, anyone else being like any minority, they would have never made another movie again. And I'm not saying it's not because this movie isn't good. And I'm also not saying like they shouldn't have been able to make another movie. I think everyone should be given this opportunity, because expecting someone to make a masterpiece with their first movie or at first anything is like one in a thousand chance, you know? And so, but like the amount of freedom they got in making this movie, and then this to be able to go 2 years later and make another movie, is wild to me. Like the fact that
even made after anything it, like, again bombed that bad,
it lost $4.5 million after they like spent 4 years making it,
and they still are like, oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, and you movie, think guys.
Like how much money, I guess, like if they made it for a year and a half, then they would have made each
like 37,000
almost 37,000, but then plus half a year, so close to what, like 50,000 or more.
So
you think 100,000 already went into it from the beginning, it doesn't happen to other people who aren't like already connected to someone in the industry like that.
Well, and I don't think a lot of times movies get made anymore by people like this, where it's like they just find someone and they just make a movie and see what happens. It usually is like you have to work in the system for a long time till like you're awarded, like they allow you to make something. I think just an interesting capsule of the time, because like I said, it too was like 1996, like in the height of Sundance and everything. And I don't think really film festivals are as interested in that anymore, because movies are more expensive and not as many people see them, so that they're less willing to take chances. But like, if no one had ever taken a chance on this, then we would have never had anything else, like any of the other movies we're talking about. So,
great point.
You know, who knows what movies we've missed out on because people weren't like just like a little patient and letting people develop their skills. The other thing I thought was interesting to bring up that you see in this movie, and in Rushmore, but like it's interesting because it's like I think a thing that we'll probably keep bringing up is like the subtle, either like the subtle using racism as humor kind of thing, or just like racism in general. And it's not like overt racism, but I think that's kind of what a lot of people have an issue with some of his movies, or many of his movies, is like the lack of self-awareness in some of the aspects of it. And I'm not saying like none of it should be in there, but I do think it's like interesting that it's like it was right there from the beginning, where like I think a lot of the people of color in the movie, all the joke is that like they are like they use like their ethnicity as like the joke, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah.
Or like the only besides the two guys in the heist, I think the only other like person of color really is like a waiter at the country club, which is like probably truthful for Texas, but it's just interesting.
Well, the people at the motel.
Right, yeah. I just blocked the motel out from my brain, I think. So.
Yeah,
there's the motel.
Well, because there's that whole scene at the motel that's like him translating for the girl or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
that's right. Yeah, I did forget about that scene. You're right. I apologize. I did forget about that scene.
I thought that scene was weird when I was watching it.
Scene is a little weird.
I love this.
Yeah, and I think it's like, and like I said, it's not that none of it should be in there, you know, like I'm not trying to say like, oh, he should never do any of this, but I do think it like is a sign of maybe things to come more, and like some of the things that they find funny that are just like, I mean, and sometimes they are, and sometimes it's like, I don't know, just seems a little more ignorant, I guess, would be a good
yeah
word to use.
And not in like those are the only roles you're casting people in.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if you're only casting someone in that role and then you are making those jokes, it's like, maybe you should have a second look-see at, like, why you're writing this and maybe, like, cast some other people in your supporting or leading roles that aren't just, like, the stereotypes, I guess, or the, like, more roles that are only specific, like how a white person would view a certain culture, I guess.
Right, exactly. And I think this movie probably more than a lot of it has the biggest pass because it is set in the real world, but most of his other movies are not set in like any specific like actual reality. So I think as it goes, it gets more obvious too, where it's like, because like, you know, it's like Texas, like it's like obviously there's going to be in this area that these guys are hanging out in just more white people. But as his career goes on and it's like less about that where people are and it's like he's just making up a world, I think it gets a little more obvious. Yeah, and we'll talk about that when we talk about we'll go into our next movie, Rushmore, which does take place in real life, but also not. Like, yeah. I don't think it really does. I think they said like it doesn't really take place in reality, so I would take their word for it. Mm. Yeah, but do you have anything else to say about Bottle Rocket before
no.
you move?
Definitely not.
Cool. I have one more thing just to say that when Anthony shows Dignan his sketchbook, like when they're staking out, that is the first time on film that Owen Wilson says, wow. So that's the first time
that
we heard him.
That is fun.
And it's his first movie. So and just interesting little tidbits that just carried on throughout his career. Just last thing. Though it's not going to really be very much in Bottle Rocket because there's not really any other big needle drops besides 2000 Man. But I did think it'd be fun if we just named our favorite needle drop after we talk about every movie. But again, like, I don't really know.
Yeah, I don't have one for
more other ones.
Bottle Rocket.
Like 2000 Man, I think is a good needle drop, but that's like the only one. So I guess that would be my answer. But I just want to say it so then everyone can expect it. Because Rushmore, as we'll talk about now, has a lot of good needle drops. So
it does.
We'll have to. It'd be harder to pick for that one. But
yeah.
This movie came out 2 years after, almost 3 years, because December 11th, 1998. So they had it was like a good amount of turnaround, I guess. Pretty standard. I believe the script was written after, but I think this idea actually they had because Owen Wilson and Wes Anderson wrote this together again because they did their first few movies written together. I think they had this idea before Bottle Rocket because it was based on experiences they both had going to private and public schools. They both went to private. It's a little confusing. So Wes Anderson went to St. John's. They're both grew in Texas, different private schools, though. He went to St. John's Preparatory School, and that's where they actually shot Rushmore. So, the school he went to is where they shot it. And then Owen Wilson went to a school called St. Mark's, but he, like Max, was kicked out and sent to a public school. So they kind of, used a lot of their experiences there, I think, and, came up with this idea, which is fun. Yeah, I mean, because, especially, I guess, when you're meeting people, you talk about what schools you went to and stuff, and so they probably both realized, oh, we had very similar experiences in school and we both lived in the same state, so they had probably shared experiences in that, a lot of different things, and this just grew naturally. I think they said too they wanted to make a Roald Dahl kind of inspired story, because it's like partially fictionalized, I guess. Like it feels more fairy tale esque, but also set in the real world. Which, you know, I think is cool. I think it'd be cool if we got more movies like that. Because Roald Dahl's great. Great yeah, author.
I would agree.
But do you want to get into this summary here?
Yeah, you want me to read it?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's not as fun because I wrote them, so okay. It's more fun if you read them. Also, this is not a great summary because this is a very hard movie to summarize. I gotta say, it's very hard.
All right, here we go. 15-year-old Max Fisher is an ambitious scholarship student studying at Rushmore Academy, where he runs most of the extracurricular clubs and writes plays for his classmates to star in. Unfortunately, the time spent on these things is time away from his studies, and at the start of the term, it's revealed that if he fails one more class, he will be expelled.
Dun, dun, dun.
However, Max's attempt to get his grades back up are soon derailed by a newfound obsession, Miss Cross, a newly widowed first-grade teacher at Rushmore. As time goes on, Max's pursuit of Miss Cross not only begins to jeopardize his status as a Rushmore student, but also his friendship with Mr. Bloom, the father of two of Max's classmates. Will Max win the girl, woman, of his dreams, or will his ambition land him in detention?
That last line is not really accurate because the end detention thing, like, I mean, he leaves the school halfway through the movie. But you gotta have a catchy hook,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
In detention, school. Yeah, this movie was definitely more successful. It had a bigger budget. Again, they lost $4.5 million, and then they doubled their budget on their next movie. Crazy. I don't understand the logic of the executives. And I do think they had to, I don't remember the studios, but I think they had to switch studios because they couldn't like agree on a budget with another studio. So they went to a different one, I guess. I don't know. But the budget was 9 to $10 million, and this made $17.1 to $19.1 million. So it did make its money back, and also the money Bottle Rocket lost. So it all came out at the end, even though this was a different studio than Bottle Rocket was made under. I do think, like, even though they are obviously talented, if this movie had failed, they definitely would not have made another movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, it doesn't matter how much privilege you have. Two flops, not happening. Sorry, guys. But thankfully, it did well. When did you watch this movie first?
At the same time. It was when I was, like, watching through. So probably that same, let me see how soon after I watched. Shout out to Letterboxd. June 22nd, 2019. So I watched it before I watched Bottle Rocket, I guessed. But I watched it within a couple days of each other.
Right. Yeah. I definitely also watched it when I watched Bottle Rocket. I don't know which one I watched first, but it was also in that time. So neither of this one is one that we grew up with, I guess, is like what's important to establish. Because that will be important when we get to other ones, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Relationships with them, but like both of these movies we don't have like nostalgic relationships with, because I think this one you could, like, there could be people I think that watch this when they were like a teenager or younger and like it really informed what they like now, especially because it's so different than other stuff that you might be seeing. So yeah, what are your thoughts on Rushmore? Not the like the monument.
I don't really have a lot of thoughts about that.
Definitely not reviewing Rushmore, the National Monument. We are reviewing
bad.
The movie.
Bad. That is the review for the monument. Very, very bad. 0 stars. No, this movie, I don't know. I would say this is also pretty mid for me. I definitely think there's a lot of cool things about it. The soundtrack's good. The score is good. I think we're now starting to see how stylized Wes can be. I wouldn't say this is, like, you know, particularly, like, stylized as he goes down the road, like, as stylized. But I do think it's showing that, like, he has a very specific knack for a specific filmmaking style, both in the way that the, like, art direction is within the film, the way it's shot, the way the characters dress, and, like, having the characters be sort of like caricatures of a certain type of person. And I think that those are all like here, and I wouldn't say they're super prominent yet, but I do think that like when you look at it, you can see how he was beginning to like start implementing these kind of things in his movies or testing out the waters to implement them. And so I appreciate stuff like that. I just don't vibe with the story, unfortunately, even if I would like to, I just don't. And so I think that kind of makes it a little more mid for me, but I don't like dislike this movie, but it definitely like is not one that I like try to revisit or think about revisiting ever.
Yeah, on the character thing too, like I definitely think way more than Bottle Rocket, because I think you could see it a little in the heist stuff, but this one is really like ensemble driven, even though it does have like the two very strong, I guess maybe you could argue three, like prominent leads. There are just so many like background characters where like they'll just like maybe not even say their name, but I did watch the commentary for both these movies, and they were like talking about people like saying their names, that like characters in the background that I don't think they ever named in the movie. So it's like you can definitely see like his interest in creating like a world, you know, in like a lot of different characters that kind of exist in this one space, more than Bottle Rocket, which I think is more like a quote-unquote traditional narrative, you know.
Sure.
So that's one thing you can definitely see, and I do think there's a lot of cool stylistic stuff, like the curtains with every season, I think is really like something that's like different. Apparently they projected that too, like I thought that it was in post, but like they projected the names of the seat of the months onto the curtain, like, and then they like stopped the projection when they moved the curtain. Just like cool stuff like that, where like they built a curtain to do that. It's just fun things, because I think you expect like his movies when you, because of like Grand Budapest, to have like huge production value stuff like that. But it is probably like pretty practical, like just like a little curtain that they have like two guys, just like one on each side, kind of pull back and like project the month on there.
Yeah,
and obviously, like, the dialogue here is much more refined, I guess, in terms of both him and Owen Wilson's style, because I think his dialogue is different when Owen Wilson's not writing with him.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you can really see their dialogue start to shine here more than Bottle Rocket, because you have a couple of those interesting interactions, but there's, like, so many funny, like, little quips and moments here that are just like really help make everything. I do really like this movie. This is like one of my favorites of his. I definitely think it like is, I don't know, like if it doesn't feel as happy, I guess, as some of his other movies, or like bright maybe is a good word for it, because there is a lot of like depressing stuff in the movie, but it's interesting how he kind of turns it around to like a bittersweet kind of like positive feeling at the end. It's just like an interesting feeling that none of his other movies really have, where he does have a lot of, and I think that is in Royal Tenenbaums too. I think that's because of Owen Wilson. The writing, there's a lot more, there's like a different element in there that's like a little bit more raw emotion and not as like painted over, I guess. You know what it's a weird way I'm trying to phrase it, but I do think there's like a different thing in here that you don't see in his later movies. So yeah, I do really like it. I think it, like, the Bill Murray and Jason, having both of them, Bill Murray and Jason Schwartzman, I think really works. I think if they're not in this movie, then it would be not very good at all, because you have to like believe the characters.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Bill Murray, he liked the script so much that he said he would do it for free, but then he did it for scale. And so they paid him $9,000 around there for this movie, which is pretty crazy. And this was Jason Schwartzman's first acting role ever.
Wow.
He was 17, and they did like, they auditioned 1,800 teenagers.
Wow. That's a lot,
which is crazy.
Especially
and then
for like a small film, like just the fact that they like auditioned that many kids is so wild to me.
And then in the end, nepotism won out again, because it's Jason Schwartzman. And I do think though, like, he's really good in this movie. Like, I'm not saying that he shouldn't have got the part, because I think like he apparently went to the audition like wearing a blazer and a Rushmore patch that he made, which is, I think, one of those things where, like, that's just like what Max would do, and so you kind of just see that in the actor and know that that's in them. That was a very good idea by him, because I think that probably was a big win, because as we know, like, they like a lot of those details in their movies, so I think that's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
You said you don't really like the story as much. What is, like, the parts of the story that maybe you don't, or, like, that you maybe you don't like here that you like, but you like his other stories better? Because, like, obviously the movies we'll talk about later in the series you do like a lot more.
I don't know. I haven't thought about it.
I mean, because it's really, like, kind of complex with the three of them, because you have Bill Murray and Max, and then you have Miss Cross. What's Bill Murray's character's name? I need actually his character.
Mr. Bloom.
That guy, yes. And so I think their dynamic is interesting, where it's like they're basically all like versions of each other, you know?
Sure.
Or Max and Mr. Bloom are versions of, like, her husband. So, like, all those things intertwining, I think it just depends on, like, how it grooves with you and how you feel like it melds to the story, because it is, like, even though it is pretty straightforward and, like, the it's not metaphorical, I guess, on face value, but I do think there is a lot of that metaphor under there. And so sometimes I think, like, not everyone likes that, or, like, it can feel weird. But I do think, I personally think that's, like, really interesting in, like, how you can see, like, aspects of them in each other, and then the fact that her husband went to Rushmore and was, like, the president of the B-Cup. Like, there's just a lot of connections there that I think that's kind of, like, a really big theme of the movie that I really like, that I don't think I even picked up the first time, because, like, the husband thing doesn't feel as important, I don't think, first time. It's just like, oh, she's a widow, because they need her not to be married for them to date her. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But it is, I think, pretty important. And with his mom, too, because, you know, you got to have the dead mom, because then it's the surrogate mother. So it's like that aspect in there, too. And then Bill Murray's midlife crisis, even though he looks a little later than midlife. I would say, like,
yeah,
5/8 life crisis, maybe.
Yeah, he definitely looks a little older.
3/4 life crisis. But yeah, there's a lot of that kind of going on, which, again, is, like I said, the like darker or, like, more complex themes that I think some people don't think work as well with Wes Anderson style, and then are not in his later films, because he's writing either with him by himself or usually with, like, Noah Baumbach or Roman Coppola, I think, is his other writing partner. So I think, like I said, that's really comes from Owen Wilson's input, probably, is what my theory is.
Because
it's just, like, interesting that, like, those themes in that way are not in later movies of his.
Yeah, or he just changed as a person.
Right, yeah, that too, you know, because he's definitely pretty young here.
Yeah, well, yeah, just having, like, different phases of life and what you tend to write about in, like, certain phases.
Right, yeah, and, like, how you have, like, different thoughts on, like, death and, like, relationships, I guess. It's just interesting, because you can definitely tell there's, like, a lot more raw emotion, like I said, in this one, which kind of comes with when you're younger, I guess, you know, that's what you're feeling more, and then when you get older, it softens a bit. Yeah, you said the soundtrack. I do think both the soundtrack and the score, like you said, are very good. The score is Mark Mothersbaugh, who did all of his, like, early movies, even Bottle Rocket he did. We didn't mention that, but I love the soundtrack, like, and that's another thing where you can immediately see it from going from Bottle Rocket, like, that aspect of having a lot of different needle drops is immediately in this movie, you know?
Yeah, and he has more money to do them, obviously. Like, once he has a bigger budget, he can get songs that he wants.
Right, exactly. Because I did see, like, I think I saw a sheet that he wrote of songs he wanted in Bottle Rocket, and they only got, like, one of them, and there was, like, 20 on there. So it's like, it definitely was something he wanted to do, like you said, but it's like, once you get the money to do it, then you're gonna do it. Apparently it was originally gonna be only songs by the Kinks, and then now there's only one Kinks song in the movie.
I think that's good.
I think
but
I think I like the Cat Stevens, like the quieter stuff, and then the John Lennon, you know, like I do think that it's nice having the variety in there rather than just the King songs. I might have gotten old, but it's an interesting idea, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to go through, because the Kinks have like so like 30 something albums, so I'm not going to do this, but it'd be interesting for someone that really knows them to go through and like think what songs could be used where, like what would be good for the opening montage, you know?
Sure.
That'd be interesting. I would like to see that, like Rushmore re-edited to just Kinks songs.
That would be funny. Yeah, I like the Kinks.
Yeah, and this needle drop that they use for their song they use here is really good.
Mm-hmm.
With him in the pool. There's a lot of good scenes here. And good characters and good lines. It's funny.
I'm trying to think which one is my favorite out of like all the needle drops, because there's some pretty good ones.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
Probably one of the Cat Stevens ones.
Mm-hmm.
Would be my favorite.
Yeah, because there's the one at the montage where it's like the three of them are like getting along. I forget what that one, Here Comes My Baby, that's what that one's called.
Yeah, I think I like the one at the end.
Yeah, the softer one.
Yeah, when
the wind blows.
Yeah,
one or
when
something.
They're flying the kite.
Yeah, that's a great scene too. I love.
Yeah, I like that scene a lot, actually.
I think Max is one of his best characters personally. Mm. Because I don't think you see a lot of character arcs in his later movies in the same like way as this kind of character arc, where it is like a very traditional, like you start off, like he grows over the movie, I guess, like
yeah.
Basic like character development. And I do really like that scene. I think it does a lot in like a little amount of time to really endear you to his character more.
Yeah. Well, I think in his other movies, like, he has so many side characters, and like I think
right.
In this one and in Bottle Rocket he doesn't have those side characters as much, or like
right.
There's not as many actual supporting actors that are in a lot of the movie, like it's just kind of the main couple characters in this one, which I think definitely like benefits the character development of all three of the main characters.
Right, yeah, like there are like the characters in the background that are funny, like the Irish kid, or Dirk is, I guess, a bigger side character, but they're not, there's no, like, emotional investment in a lot of them.
Right.
It's more just, like, their comedic relief. The boyfriend at the dinner, I love the dinner scene, it's so funny. Luke Wilson, like, it's funny that he got such a small role in this, and Owen Wilson's not even in it.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny. Maybe they were just kind of, like, tired of acting. Owen Wilson is actually in it, because he's in the pictures in Miss Cross's room of the husband. That's
the
him
husband,
in the
yeah.
pictures. So he's technically in it,
but not acting really. In it, yeah.
He's not acting.
He's not acting
in the movie.
I do love Luke Wilson, though.
Yeah, I do, too. We'll talk a lot about him, I think, next episode when we talk about Royal Tenenbaums, because he's really good in that one. My favorite needle drop... I love so many of them. I love the opening one because that's like such an adrenaline rush. And I don't know. It's just so cool. I think that's like that cut for me is when at least I think like his style is evident. Like from then on in his whole filmography, the cut to the creation song in the opening credits. That's like when I'm like, okay, he's here. That's like, I love that part. I like the Oh Yoko needle drop, mostly because they just like that song a lot. I think it's a really great song. But my favorite one's probably Ooh La La at the end.
Mm.
I think because that one, the lyrics really tie it together. And also I just really like the ending and how everything kind of comes together. I love you have everyone at the play. That's a classic Wes Anderson thing, like bringing everyone together, the whole ensemble.
Yeah.
Like panning through the audience. And then you have the big play, which a lot of stuff going on in that play.
Yes.
And then the party at the end, and I just love how it goes slow motion, and then that song, like, and like I said, the lyrics I think really kind of match a lot of the themes that they're trying to tackle, and it's just a great song too. I mean, it has to be a good song to be a good needle drop. It doesn't matter how good the placement is, but I would say that's my favorite because it's like a great song, and I really like what it's doing for the movie and how it kind of like then leads out to the credits. And it's like such a heartwarming moment too. I love that song. But I like so many of them. Like, there's not really one I don't like, I don't think. Like, every time there's a needle drop, I'm like, yeah, this is a good one. This works for this scene.
Yeah, definitely a lot of great choices there. He clearly has some good playlists on his Spotify.
Drop the Spotify, please. I would love to go through. I know that he had a lot of the songs picked out, too, before they filmed. So, like, during that opening montage, they played that song, which I don't know if that, like, always makes a difference, but I think it could have, you know, like, if they had that song playing at Ooh La La playing at the end while they were filming, that might have kind of, like, subconsciously infused what that song feels like into the scene. Interesting to think about. Because sometimes they just picked songs afterwards, like, oh, yeah, this will sound cool. But his songs are always, I think, feel very, like, oh, he thought of this song when he wrote the script. Like, this is, like, I don't know. It wasn't just, like, he went through a Spotify and was like, this song will sound cool here.
Oh, right.
It's a cool song. Which is probably what I would do, because I would just be, like, trying a bunch of different songs.
Oh, this one worked.
This song is awesome.
Shuffle through the playlist. Skip, 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 skip. Oh, this one sounds good. Let's do it.
Yeah, and it would be just not good. Not as good.
Favorite songs.
Yeah, it's just, like... I post my Spotify Wrapped and like the five songs that are there, like the five songs that are in the movie I made, pretty much.
That would be funny.
So anything else, like any other thoughts on this movie maybe you had? We could talk about, like, I don't think there's really as much of the, like, the racism aspect, because it's a lot more of the same stuff with Bottle Rocket than I think we'll see in his later movies. But I mean, it's still there a little bit.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, in Kumar, I love Kumar. Like, I love how they use him, too, in, like, all of the early movies. I think he's a really funny actor, and I love his line deliveries here. And in Bottle Rocket, when he's like, I think I lost my touch, man. I don't know. And he's like, did you ever have a touch to lose? It's very funny. It's a very funny.
Oh, we didn't even talk about Brian Cox being in this.
Wow. The OG himself.
Yeah, which is so funny because the first time I watched this, I wasn't watching Succession then. Obviously have since watched Succession. And so anything else he's in, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Logan Roy.
And here he is. And he's so funny in this too.
No, I think he plays the headmaster role very well. And I also like the scene in the hospital when he, like, opens the eye. And at the play when he's like, flip the page. Okay, I'm done. I don't want it anymore. Yeah, he's a funny actor. And he's actually very similar to Logan. It's like a softer Logan Roy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's not cussing and being like...
Right. He's a school headmaster. He's got to be a little tamer,
but,
you know?
Well, and he's tired of this kid. My God, if this kid were, like, in my school, I would be like, he needs to go.
Hey, if he has to stay on for a postgraduate year, so be it.
Mm.
You know, we don't offer a postgraduate year. We don't offer one yet. To end our talk on Rushmore, I have a little bit of a hypothetical I'm going to pitch to you.
Okay.
So... You're a Rushmore student.
Great.
And Max Fisher comes up to you and he needs your help. And because of his poor grades, Headmaster Guggenheim said he needed to cut down on his extracurriculars and get his friend to take over some of his duties.
Oh, boy.
So I have a list of all of his extracurriculars here.
Oh,
and you
my.
Have to tell me
okay.
which one you would take. You know, you have to take one.
Okay.
So we have
one.
The Yankee Review Editor-in-Chief, which I think already is a good start. You know,
sure.
That's not a bad one. The French club president. No, I don't speak French. Do you speak French?
I do. I took French. I mean, not a lot. I did take 2 years of French in high school, though.
All right. Model UN Russia.
It's going to be a no for me.
That's a stamp and coin club vice president.
That's definitely
really
a hard no.
Into that debate team. I don't have the personality for that.
I could do debate team, maybe.
The captain of the debate team, though?
You
would be the captain.
No.
The leader, not the follower. Manager of the lacrosse team?
No.
I don't know how to play lacrosse.
Soccer I could do, but...
President of the calligraphy club.
That sounds like something I would do.
If I could do it, I would like it. I definitely wouldn't be interested in the astronomy society.
Oh, I would totally do that.
Oh, okay, so you want to maybe help run the Astronomy Society, potentially?
I love space, yeah.
Okay. Fencing team?
No.
Track and field?
No.
I don't.
Definitely not.
I don't do that. Choir master? I could do this.
You could. I could
not. And also,
not.
He wasn't conducting. I could do better than him, because I don't know what he was doing over there. He was just waving his arms around. Kung Fu Club? I'm not a yellow belt either.
No, yeah.
So. Trap and Skeet Club, that's going to be a no
for
me.
That's a hard no. Anti-guns. Abolish all guns.
Rushmore Beekeepers, another hard no. Not a fan of bees.
That sounds kind of fun, but I think that I would take the L on that one, so I'm going to say no.
Do you want to be part of the Yankee Racers?
You know, I don't think
not,
so.
Not the worst
I don't
one,
think it's
but...
the worst on the list, but I think it would be just too, too much work.
For this one, I would like to be in the Max Fisher Players, like a cast member. Mm. I would not want to be the director, though.
Well, those plays are absurd. Like,
yeah, they're a lot of work.
You know, I've done my stint in a drama club. I was a theater kid at one point, and yep. I just don't need that in my life. So I'm going to take a no on that.
All right. And lastly, do you want to be part of the Kite Flying Society?
Mm, that does sound relaxing. Like,
yeah, I wouldn't say no. I'm still going to go for choir master because I think that's the one I would be most confident in. Like, I could be in the Kite Flying Society, but if I was like leading it, I don't think I know enough about kites to do.
Yeah,
that.
I think my issue with a lot of these is like, I don't want to be in charge. Like,
right.
Like Yankee Review. If I were just a writer for the school newspaper, great. Photographer,
well,
great.
I think the lacrosse team, he's not coaching it. He's just like, cleaning, getting the gear, getting the water.
Oh, that's terrible. You don't want to be a team manager for a sports team.
Well, I'm just saying, if you could do it, I don't know. Do you?
I would do the Astronomy Society.
Yeah, because all it says is that he's the founder.
Yeah,
so I don't think it means you have to, like,
I
run
like
it.
Stars. I look like looking through telescopes.
I like stars.
So, I mean, what else? I don't know what all you would do in an Astronomy Society, but I assume it would be about, like, planets and stars, right?
I would assume those would be two highly debated topics.
Yeah. Is Pluto a planet? Yes, he is.
Every week is actually, that's their debate.
Pluto,
and then
they them of the day.
And they pair with they collab with the debate team on that one.
Sure.
Yeah, but just going into our final thoughts here on his first two movies, what are you feeling with these first two? Because, like, early movies, are you feeling, like, good about where... What about this? If you had only seen these two and didn't know the rest of his career, you know? Like, what would you feel like about him?
I wouldn't like him. I would probably... Wow. This is going to sound like... I think I would consider him... I know a lot of people consider both of these guys on the same plane. I do not. But with the early movies, I would consider him the same as Noah Baumbach, who I...
Oh, yeah, but you don't like Noah Baumbach.
I do not.
So it's a different,
so
a
it's
different thing for you.
I really don't like Noah Baumbach. He's, like, one of my least favorite directors and writers. I have not enjoyed basically all of his movies.
Hey, he wrote Life Aquatic, so we'll see.
Yeah, which is interesting, because I like Life Aquatic.
He also wrote Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted, though. So he got some duds in there, too.
But I feel like these first two do feel similar to Noah Baumbach movies. Mm. And I feel like that would be my general, like, comparison. And that, like, I just don't know that I would be keen to watch more of his movies after watching just the first two. Like, if I had watched them, I would be like, man, this guy's, like, a dick. He is, like, not good at writing. He writes dumb characters who are just mean.
Wow.
But, like, I think
Mac Fisher is nice at the end.
Well,
he's a nice guy,
but you know what I mean.
He's
like,
15.
I think Max is a good character. But if this was all you watched without knowing Wes Anderson and his writing style and how he writes stories through all his other movies, then you only watch this and you're like, this kid is annoying. This movie is annoying. I think that would be my, like, I wouldn't watch any of his other movies after just watching these two.
Except then Royal Tenenbaums comes out, and then everyone loves it, and then you go see it, and then
Yeah, I don't really like that one as much either. Sorry.
That's a real L. I would love, I would be in. I mean, Bottle Rocket, I don't know about that. Like, that one I think is a very obviously like a first feature kind of thing. Obviously, a very few people saw it, so I might not have even have saw it in the theater. So I think most people probably were introduced to him from just Rushmore, of the two. I would be very into him. I mean, I love Rushmore, so it's not a surprise. I do think Noah Baumbach is a good comparison. I don't know which he's made Kicking and Screaming at this point, I think. Maybe just only that.
Yeah, which feels similar.
Yeah, definitely. I do think, though, I think the writing style in these two movies is a lot less cynical than Noah Baumbach's writing style.
I would agree.
I think Noah, like, his outlook on the world is, and I like Noah Baumbach's movies, some of them, but his, like, overall outlook in, like, a lot of his movies is a lot, like, more bleak, because he's also writing more adult characters, because even in Bottle Rocket, I would argue that they're not really adult characters. Dignan is basically, like, on the same playing field as Max mentally.
Yes.
Like, as, like, emotionally, like, as a person. And so I think that what my impression would be is that his characters were pretty, like, an interesting, I don't know, just more interesting than I think other characters are, in my opinion. And I do think he's actually, in a lot of his movies, after, like, an interesting version of masculinity, which I think we can talk about as his movies go on. Where, like, there's just, like, he has a very specific view of the, of, like, his own masculinity, I think, and that comes through in all of his characters, which I think Noah Baumbach also has a specific view of his masculinity, but it's not one that I like as much.
No, definitely not.
So, I mean, and I don't dislike Noah Baumbach. I actually really do like Kicking and Screaming, but for different reasons, you know, and I would definitely watch Rushmore before Kicking and Screaming, mostly because I think
I would 100% watch Rushmore any day over Kicking and Screaming.
We're not talking about Will Ferrell movie, you know, they're different movies.
Yes, I think people sometimes get them confused.
Very different movies, but yeah, I would be excited, I guess, going into this next phase of his career. And I do think, I mean, at least Royal Tenenbaums, it, like, gets, like, either, like, just as good or better. So we'll see what we get to that, though, when we get the episode in July.
Mm. Yeah.
What I think exciting would be an interesting question. Coming. An interesting question of the week is, like, what club would you start up at Rushmore?
Film club, I think, would be a good one.
Yes.
But it needs to be called, like, something silly. Like, not just film club. Like, it needs to be, like, Les Cinephiles Society or something.
So then, like, only two people come.
Yeah.
But then you only talk about, like, Air Bud and Rush Hour.
Yes.
Like, you trick people. They're like, oh, yes.
Let me think. Okay, so I think that one that I would start would be, like, a Hallmark movie club.
Wow.
Like, specifically, so like, Hallmark movies.
Yes. That sounds like a good club.
Yeah, or like a rom-com club, but, like, something like that. Let's see. What kind of ones would you do?
I would probably do, like, well, with the theme of Rushmore, maybe I would do, like, a British Invasion club where you go through a lot of British Invasion artists.
Okay.
Like the Kinks and, like, the Beatles and Rolling Stones. And maybe you even compare them to, like, where the music came from,
okay,
and then what it did. I think that'd be interesting. I'm very interested in 60s, like, British Invasion stuff. So that I'll say I'll do that club, you know? That sounds like a fun time.
I think I would also do, like, a Muppets club, where you talk about the Muppets. You watch the Muppets.
Yeah.
There's
so many Muppet shows.
Well, it could even be, like, a Muppet club in combination with a puppet club. So it's like puppeteering, but with Muppets.
That would be interesting. You have puppeteers come in and, like, show you the ropes on different things. Masterclasses.
Yeah, and you learn how to do puppets. And I think that would be a fun one. I would probably do soccer, of course.
Soccer club.
Photography club.
Or just soccer.
Yeah,
I'm surprised that he didn't do a photography club. That seems like something that he would be into.
Or maybe like a documentary club could be cool. Like, you watch documentary movies.
Different types. Like, one person picks one every month.
Yeah, and then you could bring in, like, outside people to, like, come talk about those things.
Documentarians.
Like a local history expert on whatever the topic is about. I don't know. Lots Amazing. Of good options.
So many clubs to start. So let us know your club that you would start. And we'll read them in the next episode, and we'll see if we would join them.
Mm.
You know, I'll see if I would join.
Yeah, so make sure.
Club.
Yeah, make sure your club is interesting, and we'll see. Let's see. I could see Danny doing what? Like a Dune club? Like a sci-fi reading club?
I just think
or
calling it
only
the Dune.
Dune
club
only
funnier.
Dune club. It could be the Dunk the Dunk club.
Hey, they got a lot of books they could do, you know? Take them right through one for each semester,
yeah.
Maybe. Take them a lot through high school. Yeah. So let us know your club. You can answer that question on any of our social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can answer it on Spotify using that. Answer feature down underneath like the player or on our website or email it to us. All that stuff is down below, so you can just go down there or like in the show notes, go there and follow the links. And while you're there, you can maybe leave us a review. That'd be very helpful. Review and rating, 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify helps us a lot, and we like reading reviews too, so it's like a win-win for us.
It is.
Just quickly explain. So next week, what are we doing?
We're taking a break next week. I know we
classic
just recently
Ross and Rachel move
took a break. Wow.
Yes, we're on a break.
I'm really busy right now because my team that I coach is in the state tournament for soccer.
Wow,
so.
your lacrosse team. That
wow,
you
yeah, lacrosse, which I know nothing about. No, yeah, so I, like, we were originally going to do a Jurassic Dominion?
Yeah. Dominion, yeah.
And it just is like, there's no time to watch a billion Jurassic movies or to, like, want to rewatch the Chris Pratt movies just to do an episode right now. So,
well, it really shows you too, like, because this is like the culmination of the entire series, and it just shows you how little excitement there is. That, like, because if we were excited enough for this, we would find a way to do.
I would have found a way.
A review.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just not excited enough to try, because I'm also traveling on Saturday, and so it's like it just, you know, just is a little busy. But the week after, then
we got
we
a good one.
Lightyear. Lightyear's away. I'm not sure about this one.
I'm not super excited about it, but...
I'm a little scared.
I think it's going to look really nice. I do. I do think it's going to look gorgeous on a big screen. That being said...
True that.
I can't say this is a movie I have super been looking forward to, so...
Yeah. Well, it is the first Pixar movie in... 2 years that we'll be watching in theaters.
Yeah, good.
You know,
good point. So that'll be interesting.
We watched 3 on Disney Plus, but going back to the big screen.
Since Onward, right?
Onward in March 2020. So it's over 2 years now. Wild.
Wow.
Yeah. So in two Tuesdays, that one will come out, which is what is that date? The 21st of June. So yeah, stick around for that, and we'll probably also update our Pixar rankings. You know, see where see where it fits in.
Fun.
Will it be towards the bottom or to the top?
My prediction is it'll be in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But you know,
you never know.
No, I'm reserving judgment. You know, my heart is open to Lightyear. Wow. Anything else until then?
I got nothing.
Well, until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla. And we're your second-hand film critics.